meeting of Senate Labor and Commerce to order. It is February 15th and 1:40, and present today is Senator Ellis and myself, Bundy. Senator Seekins will be along shortly, and excused today are Senator Stevens and Davis. First on our agenda, and we'll take public testimony and hope to have Senator Seekins to along here shortly, is House Bill 64, extension of the Board of Public Accountancy, and Representative Honker, if you would be accountable, we will call over.
Late present and accounted for, sir. Thank you, Senator. Senator Ellis, this housekeeping measure, of course, the Board of Public Accountancy has reached its current authorized termination date. The bill before us proposes extending that to June 30, 2009, in accordance with recommendations made by our internal auditor. The LBNA internal auditor has concluded their recurring examination, determined that the board has been meeting the statutory requirements of public need, and it is in compliance with statutes that require occupational licensing fees to cover this regulatory cost of that occupation. The audit identified one issue for attention, and that was in our process of complying with changing national standards for testing. We had resulted in a situation where we only had one testing location for public accountants in the state. The board has proactively been dealing with that situation. They've already established a testing facility in Fairbanks and are working currently on establishing one in Juneau. So with that, we request your indulgence in moving the bill forward.
And a question, if I might, we did note the delay in addressing complaints, and other than spending money and hiring people, is there a solution to speeding up the addressing complaints, or should I address that question to someone else?
I would certainly, give a quick answer, but Mr. Steve Tirola, who is the chairman of the board, is present. But in discussions with himself and the auditor, having the circumstances gently brought to his attention, I believe that will result in a bit more remediation there. But it also should be note that the issues and complaints brought forward, they were all classified as extremely. They've got a category of low priority by the Division of Occupational Licensing, and none of these ever resulted in any referral to the ombudsman or anything of issues. So I suspect it was more, again, housekeeping measures, but with the Mr. Tirola and the current board would pay more attention as a result of the audit bringing it to their attention.
Thank you. Questions? Pat, would you like to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. And the first thing I ought to mention is, being the legislative auditor, I'm required to be a CPA, and therefore we are not independent with respect to this board. However, we still do the audit because we're required to by statute. As Representative Hawker indicated, we did recommend a four-year extension for this board, which is what the bill does. Also identified a problem in terms of going to the national computerized exam helped because you went from being able to take the exam twice a year to four times a year. However, it went from being in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks down to just Anchorage. But we did notice that the board is being proactive in trying to establish additional testing sites. With regard to your question about resolving complaints in a timely manner, we actually, as part of another audit, looked across the board at investigations in total. It's difficult to look board by board because you don't have uniquely identified investigators associated with individual boards. So we actually looked across because we had so many of the occupations up for sunset in this particular year. We looked across investigations, and we did see problems in terms of timeliness, in terms of getting at investigations done, taking actions. And we've made recommendations to the department, which they have agreed with. And as we move forward in doing subsequent year sunset reviews, we'll be also looking at how well they're implementing those recommendations.
Thank you.
Anyone like to sing and dance while we wait for Senator Seekins? We'll stand at ease while I... do we have someone from Representative Sam? You've done well.
Senator, with the indulgence of the committee, I will retire to finance.
Yes. If that, you can consider that retirement. That'll bring us to House Bill 47. And I don't want you to go back to the House and tell them the Senate is dragging their feet and can't get their work done. But we can take testimony on House Bill 47, and which is the extension of the Board of Real Estate Appraisers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Lelania Snyder, staff to Representative Samuels. House Bill 47 is just a simple bill, kind of like the one you just heard. It's a bill that's the result of a legislative audit that recommended the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers be extended. The board's functions are to set standards for appraisers in the real estate industry, oversee the examinations by which appraisers are certified, and adopt regulations to make sure state and federal requirements are satisfied. Also, there was an amendment to this bill just to clean up the language, changing licensed to certified, just making the language more consistent throughout the statute. And also, it would extend the sunset date of the board until June 30th, 2010. And Representative Samuels would appreciate your support in its passage.
Would he? Well, you tell him that this is such an important bill, we're going to have to give it a lot of consideration, at least until Senator Seekin shows up.
Yes.
Questions for the bill sponsor? If not, Pat, would you like to go?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, my name is Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. The use of state certified real estate appraisers will be a continuing requirement for Alaska's financial institutions to qualify for federal deposit insurance and to participate in selling mortgage loans to federal government-sponsored enterprises such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Therefore, we make a recommendation that the legislature extend the termination date of this board, and additionally, we had no recommendations for any operational improvements.
The chair notes with some interest that they're breaking even. They don't raise their fees, nor are they costing the state money. I see no questions. Thank you, Pat. We will set this bill aside, awaiting our minimum to take action. But I see Senator Stevens' staff is here, and we could begin testimony on Senate Bill 93. It's now the chair's intent to move 93 today, so we can begin testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and member of the committee. My name is Cheryl Sutton, and I am staff to Senator Ben Stevens. Senate Bill 93 addresses the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and the first fact that we need to understand about the commission is that they are totally fee-based funded. They receive no general funds. From the charts in your packets, you can see that the commission has been on a downward trend in revenue. And I'm going to hold up some charts so that you'll know which ones in your packet show these things. It'll be that one accompanied with this one. And that revenues and operational costs will soon meet, and revenues will continue in the downward trend under the current fee structure. This is in spite of the fact that the commission has greatly reduced their workforce, and that is on this chart that's in your packet. Some of the contributing factors are the Carlson case, the decline in value in certain fisheries, and the consolidation of various fisheries. Senate Bill 93 accomplishes several purposes. It will bring the state into compliance with recent rulings in Carlson v. State of Alaska. The Carlson case was a class action brought against the state by non-resident fishermen who claimed that the fee structure was not lawful. The state had charged a 3-to-1 fee differential for non-residents. The court agreed that the fees could not be established in this manner and issued a mandated formula that is now calculated by OMB. And I, yes, sir.
Could I ask your indulgence and interrupt
and let
your
me
testimony?
Go sit over here and you continue.
As long as we have,
yes.
Senator Seekins, if you're late, you're going to be demoted to.
It's all right.
Security guard.
And Mr. Chairman, Chairman, if I could, I'd like to move that we pass House Bill 47 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Without objection.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd move that I'd make a motion that we move House Bill 64 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And without objection. Now I need to explain to the committee. We last meeting passed out CS for Senate Bill 52. Well, apparently we adopted a CS that didn't need to be adopting, and not mentioning any names, but his word shall be trash from now on.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we rescind our amendments passed last week on the CS for Senate Bill number 52, Labor and Commerce, and that
rescind our previous action,
correct, in adopting it.
Yeah. There we go. And we do not need a CS now, is that correct? And so we will then have before us the Senate Bill 52 unamended.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move.
Oops, wait a minute. My brain's here, my extended memory.
We made an amendment to the CS. We don't need the amendment, but we need the CS.
We need the CS. Never mind.
Okay, we rescinded our amendment
to the CS.
To the CS.
Okay, is that clear?
Yes.
All right.
So then, Mr. Chairman, I would move the CS for Senate Bill number 52 unamended from committee with individual recommendations attached fiscal notes.
And
no,
we need to adopt CS.
We adopt the CS. Right.
Yeah.
Move we adopt the CS.
Yes.
For Senate
without
Bill number 52.
Objection.
Now I'd move that we move the Senate Bill CS out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection.
Have we done that correctly?
That was thank you.
I'm sorry.
And for those of you that are observing your government in action, trust me, it works better than this sometimes. And we will return to testimony on 93, and then we'll take up 100.
Mr. Chairman, I'm used to being abused by the senator who left the room, so that's fine.
Careful. Make a note of that.
Yes.
I'm probably going to make the paper.
And actually, I forget where I was because I was. I'll start where I think I was. I know where I was.
Up on the
okay.
Chart.
The court agreed that the fees could not be established in this manner and issued a mandated formula that is now calculated by OMB. And I have all of this information, and it is available to you, and I will give it to Jane if you're interested in looking at it. It's quite an involved process, but I will give it to Jane, and she can circulate it to you. The major component contained in Senate Bill 93 is the removal of the $300 cap for annual permit renewal currently in statute. This is an artificial cap because the statute states that the base fee must reasonably reflect the different rates of economic return for different fisheries. The cap results in fisheries with a very high economic return being charged fees that are disproportionately low. The bill asks you to remove the $300 cap, and the commission will develop regulations for the categories and fees through a public hearing process. Another document that is in your packet is this chart. And I want to point out to you that the fisheries that are represented here and the fees that are represented here will not be the actual. These are based on actual 2005 fees. And as I just mentioned, they reflect economic returns. So this is not exactly what it will be, but it will be fairly close. The other Carlson compliance element clarified in the bill is to charge a non-resident fee differential of $115 only one time, regardless of how many permits a non-resident is issued. The court said that the state could only charge the differential once, and the commission has been complying with this mandate. Another non-resident element pertains to those who qualify for reduced or a poverty fee. These individuals would still be required to pay the full non-resident differential. The vessel license fees are also addressed in this bill, and that is on this chart. A modest modification is proposed. The six vessel length categories are maintained, and the fees are raised by $15, $30, $45, $60, $75, and $90, respectively. And you'll see what the current fee is and then what the proposed fees are. I might point out on this also, you'll note down the bottom, that this has not been amended since 1995. I'll be glad to answer any questions, but Frank Holman, commissioner from CFEC, is here, and he could much more eloquently answer the questions, I'm sure.
I see Mr. Tolman would like to testify, so let's get the testimony, and then perhaps that will answer questions or even generate more.
All right.
And we will also get to Mr. Birch's testimony. Mr. Tolman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Holman with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and I think that all I would add at this time is that what I would agree with what Cheryl has said here in her opening remarks of the need for the bill and the continuing reaction that we've had to impose because of the Carlson case over the last several years has been a major factor in the decline of our revenues, but there are other factors as well of consolidation of fishing fleets in federal and state waters, lower values of fishery permits upon which we base our fees as a percentage of the permit values. Have been declining, and reduction in the number of permits purchased as a result of non-transferable permits, which are held until the permit holder dies, and then they're retired. So there's fewer of those each year. So the direction is for continuing downward slope, and in the fiscal year 06, we estimate we will not be able to cover our budget by revenues generated alone. So we're proposing this fee increase that will get us out a few more years. That's kind of the essence of what the bill does. We've structured it, as you'll see in some of the backup material, that the artificial cap at $300, those fisheries that are what we're calling lesser value fisheries that are now at $300 or below would generally stay there. They wouldn't be affected except just modestly with the $30 or $45 increase. But what the removal of the cap does is allows those higher value fisheries to fall into their position on the fee schedule basis where it's our formula for calculating the fee is 0.4% of the value of the permit. It will allow them to fall where they naturally would fall and not be held down artificially. So that's makes a significant difference in the revenues that would be generated. So that's sort of the essence of what we're doing.
I had a question about the something Cheryl mentioned, that the non-resident that could apply or qualify for the poverty permit would still pay the non-resident differential. In other words, if I understood it, that the base permit fee could be reduced, but there was a differential that they would have to pay that applied to non-residents only.
That's correct. And what we're doing there is the resident also can claim a poverty fee, which is one half of the base fee, and a non-resident can also. The way that the statute was written before, it it said one half of the fee collected. So in order to divide that up so that you get one half of the base fee, but then the surcharge for the non-resident was the full surcharge. And that's sort of to make it equivalent to what the resident pays. And the way, as Cheryl mentioned with OMB, the way that they calculate the non-resident fee is those fees that residents pay through taxes, and through taxes means the oil revenues, basically, are calculated at this year $115. So that's what a resident pays. So we thought it was fair that the non-resident pay that same fee, even though they're in the poverty category. But this doesn't apply to maybe only 20 or 25 people.
That's what I was going to ask. It seems kind of a contradiction of terms that you'd have a non-resident coming to Alaska to fish in or some fairly high capitalized industry and then claim poverty. I mean, like sort of like shooting your parents and throwing yourself on the mercy of the court as an orphan. Never mind, you don't have to answer the question.
All right.
You got a $100,000 boat, so you can't afford, and you have to. Well, never mind. But there are about 20 people there.
Yeah, so there are just a handful.
Questions from Mr. Hallman? Seeing none, thank you. We do have someone online that would like to testify, Mr. Birch.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and Cheryl. This is Al Birch in Kodiak. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you fine. Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Yes. I just got back from 8 days in Seattle at the council meeting, and I was really prepared to do battle over Senate Bill 93 until I sat down and looked at it a little closer. At this time, I will support 93 for the removing of the cap. My problem will be with the proposed methodology for implementing Senate Bill 93. And again, I've only had limited time to look this over. I represent about 45 trawlers here in the Gulf of Alaska. A lot of those vessels also do halibut longlining. If I read this methodology right, we will, as trawlers, go from $300 to $3,975. As longliners, we will go from $300 up to $1,500. I think the problem that I see here in the trawl and listening to the testimony, Mr. Holman there, my little vessels in the Gulf, you know, over 59, that MO7B, are being lumped in with the super trawlers, the super surimi trawlers in the Bering Sea. Our vessels here in Kodiak, you know, some of our smaller ones may gross $200,000 a year. That vessel in the Bering Sea, I know of one vessel that does over $30 million a year. I don't think it's equitable to charge our little boats here in the Gulf $3,975 and charge that super trawler the same amount. So I will be down in Juneau. Mr. Holman will be at our meeting there. We will discuss this issue. I'm not adverse to a reasonable raise. I understand that CFEC does need to continue to be in existence. It'd be pretty hard to get state money for them. So I don't have problems with the raise, but it has to be equitable. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for your testimony. As I said earlier, we will be holding the bill over until Senator Stevens has a chance to provide us with his insight on the bill as well. So we will welcome further testimony. And did you have another comment you'd like to make, Mr. Holman? And welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, Frank Holman, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. I just would comment on Mr. Birch's testimony about the small boats that get caught up with large boats in the various sea classes. And what I would like to say for the record that if the bill passed with the fee cap removed, we would then, by regulation, establish the fee classes, and that would be through a public hearing process, and we would be certainly open to look at the fee classes that we have, and if they're not properly situated for the smaller boats, we could certainly make that amendment, and we'd be happy to look at that. That was because of the cap of $300 before, it was never arrived as an issue because the fees never got high enough to make the distinction between the small boats and the large boats. But now that we're anticipating the removal of the cap, that would make a difference, and we would make an adjustment for that. So we'll look at that during the public hearing. I just wanted to reassure him that we weren't purposely throwing the small boats in with the large boats.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony at this point, but we'll reopen it when we rehear the bill at a future date. That brings us to Senate Bill 100, and if...
It's my understanding to adopt the CS, you only need two, but if you're going to move anything out...
We'll move it, but we can adopt it.
You can adopt it.
Okay. Johnny, then it'd be okay with you to adopt the CS. Okay. And we do have before us Senate Bill 100. We do need to adopt a CS as our working document for our Senate Bill 100. And with no objections,
you just need to cite which one it is, backslash.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it's backslash Yankee. It's Cook 2-1105 backslash Yankee.
No objection.
Senate, or our CS for Senate Bill 100, addresses the 911, enhanced 911 surcharges. I think you are pretty knowledgeable about that, but I'll briefly go over the issue. We've been mandated to have an enhanced 911. There's been instances in Anchorage where it would have been very valuable to address life-threatening and emergency situations when responders could not respond timely to a call from 911. This problem is increasing. Local municipalities want to provide this service, are required to provide this service, and at this point don't have an option to pay for the service. Senate Bill 100 would increase their ability to pay for the service by $2. Well, the cap of $2 could be circumvented or surmounted by a vote of the people in the affected area, and that is, in a nutshell, what Senate Bill 100 is. Lauren Wickersham is here to flesh out the bill a little bit more and answer questions. We have a number of people who would like to testify as well.
For the record, my name is Lauren Wickersham, and I'm staff to Senator Bundy. And the CS, the only change in the CS is on the original second page, lines 11 and 12, there's the clause, and the billing method used for both types of surcharges must be substantially similar. Senator Bunny determined that was redundant because it is already in statute under AS 2935131 B, C, and D. It specifies that billing should be done on a monthly basis and that the billing cycle should be the same for wireless and wireline companies. And it also reads, shall remit a local exchange telephone company or wireless telephone company that has collected the enhanced 911 surcharge shall remit the amounts collected to the municipality no later than 60 days after the end of the month in which the amount was collected. And so we felt as though that clause was redundant and unnecessary. Would you like me to read any of Section C or B? Are you okay? Okay.
We do have someone online with a time constraint for testimony, so if we don't have any additional questions for Ms. Wickersham at this time, we'll go online to Chief Fullenweider.
For the record, my name is Craig Goodrich, G-O-O-D-R-I-C-H. I'm the Deputy Chief at the Anchorage Fire Department. Chief Fullenweider had a previous engagement that could not be changed.
That's fine. Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, it is crucial that the committee appreciate that this is, it's imperative that a bill come out of the legislature governing these issues this year. For all of the financial reasons that I think are clear in the bill, but beyond that, in order to service the public, and perhaps by way of sharing a bit of information to enhance understanding, 50% of our calls today come through cell phones. And if you appreciate that very often, whether on landline or by cell phone, the emergency drives the individual to not be aware of their surroundings, and in fact very often in either case they don't know what address to give us. When it's a landline, however, we can certainly look back and track it right to the telephone, and when the chips are really down we can figure out how to get to that scene. That is absolutely not the case though with cell phones, and as emergencies increase and as people take the cell phones out into the backcountry and out into the wilderness, and remember, please, that you don't have to be very far away from a community to be in the wilderness in our state. People are often out where they cannot give us directions on how to get to them. And this system is only increasing. I think it's important to state also that the department is very interested in a bill coming out this year, and in reading either the House bill or the Senate bill, we don't see anything that is a showstopper. We do have a couple of concerns, however. One of those is pretty straightforward. The bills in both cases talk about the surcharge going to the center, the call-taking center, and we would respectfully request consideration for the bill to contain some language so that at least a portion of those funds go to the dispatch centers. This is the difference in Anchorage, where we have a fire dispatch center separate from a law enforcement or the call-taking center. It's certainly the case in the Kenai Peninsula and in other areas around the state as well. Mr. Chairman, that completes our testimony.
Thank you. Questions? We don't have questions at this point. Would like perhaps you to get us some more information, flesh out the call-taking versus the dispatch center, see if we can address that issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just for you, was it your intent in the bill, did you think of those as the same thing, just interchangeable language, and they make a distinction?
Yes.
Okay.
And it may be just a matter of definition, but I don't think it's an insurmountable problem. I did want to check with you, Deputy Chief, if I heard correctly, 50% of the emergency calls that the Anchorage Fire Department receives are from cell phones? I think we lost.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, are you still there?
Yeah, you bet.
Craig Goodrich here. Again, we were going mute, unmute there for some reason. Not sure what was happening, but if I understood your question correctly, you're asking if 50% of our calls are from cell phones, and we're approaching or at that number today. Yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you. We'll move on to Chief Monaghan.
Senator?
My name is Walt Monaghan with Anchorage Police. Mr. Chairman, I'd appreciate the fact that your committee has recognized the importance of the public safety issue that on this the 911 surcharge, and that you've chosen this time for our testimony. SB 100 provides the flexibility for local government to justify realistic surcharge rates to maintain and operate 911 centers. Providing such local control within the parameters of the bill is much better than what presently exists. What we currently have is a 50-cent surcharge in statute. I could tell you, specific to Anchorage, that contractually to our telephone company provider, that out of that 50 cents, 21 cents of it pays for the addressing per line for every one of our customers that we serve on 911. In other words, if I had, we actually pay 316,000 lines, we pay 21 cents a piece for every month. So you can see that out of the 50 cents that we collect every month for the surcharge, presently, 21 cents goes right back to the telco, not leaving a whole bunch more for the services that we're required to provide. As Chief Goodrich explained, that there is new challenges out there. Recently, just last summer, we had a young lady who was lost in the Chugach Park. She called on her cell phone, and she said that, "I'm lost. Can you come and help me?" And, of course, we asked, "Where?" And she said, "If I knew that, I wouldn't be lost." We eventually did find her, and so it was a happy ending in this case. It wasn't quite as tragic, of course, as the Godfrey, as you alluded to. We are working to enhance our equipment and our ability through grants and bonds. We were able to buy a lot of the equipment that will give us that enhanced 911 capability. We receive about 250,000 calls per year. 58% of them are all 911 calls. And Chief Goodrich is right. About half of those are coming from cell phones, which we do not have the ability to know location or address from currently. Those 21 cents that we pay for every line from the telcos amounts to about 800,000 a year for database management. You tack on to that about $260,000 a year for infrastructure costs. We currently operate with an additional operational cost, a total of about $3 million a year. So if you take all that and add it together, we pay about $4 million in operations and maintenance for our enhanced 911 presently. We, at 50 cents, currently receive about $2 million. So as you see, cost is borne by the taxpayers through property taxes to make up the difference.
Just for the committee's information, I believe you have a chart in your packet that shows not only for Anchorage, but Fairbanks, Juneau, and Kenai.
That's correct. Well, we are in very much support of your bill, sir, and that we would like to see the surcharge in this bill passed, because it'll provide us the opportunity through resources to provide a better service to the community that we're all sworn to protect. There's a couple things that obviously we would wish otherwise, but in regards to how to go beyond the $2, but actually that is small issues, more housekeeping things, to the greater effect that the enhanced surcharge will give us.
Questions? I have a question. It's my understanding that by raising the cap to $2, that will allow the flexibility to address the costs of enhanced 911 for several years to come?
That's correct. In fact, if this should pass and we are able to bump it up, the consultant and our own internal experts on 911 and our operating costs, figure we won't even approach that $2 cap for at least 5 or 6 years. And we're looking at perhaps enhancing or raising that charge for somewhere around $1.
The initial raise would be about $1. Senator Seekins has been able to rejoin us. I hope you were successful next door.
I got my work done.
Okay. We are looking at Senate Bill 100, the Enhanced 911 Bill, and Chief Monaghan has just finished his testimony. We had testimony previously from Deputy Chief of Fire in Anchorage that they felt it's essential, and that the testimony we just had is that they're currently operating at about a 50% deficit. Other questions for the Chief? Hearing none. Thank you, Chief.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's go back to I'm sorry, there was somebody. Anybody else here like to testify here in Juneau? Please.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Erin Calwara. I live in the city of Juneau, and I work for the Juneau Police Department. I'm the Public Safety Systems Coordinator. Within that job, I manage the 911 system, administrate it, and anything I need to do to make that work. So we very much support this bill with possibly a couple changes. Unlike the chief from Anchorage, I'm not sure that I could say that $2 will hold us over longer than 5 years with technology changing so much so rapidly with wireless. We're not even phase one or phase two compliant in Juneau right now with wireless. So we would like to see the $2 in order to at least get us to that point. Above and beyond that, we have concerns about voice over IP, other technologies, people having...
Sorry, can you define voice over IP for us?
You can sit at your computer and make a phone call. So the same kinds of things where you plug a jack into the wall and use the internet. You can also use a phone. It's very difficult to locate where those calls are coming from, similar to a wireless situation, which hasn't even been broached really in Juneau yet, at least. People have personal communication devices that they, you know, maybe a PDA or something could be used in a similar manner, something you could just hang on your ear, a very small piece of equipment. We have no idea what's coming. We know what we're working on right now. So I don't know that I could say that 5 years from now, I would think that we would need a good $3.
Okay. Questions? No, thank you very much. We'll go back to a teleconference. George, let's see, you were just going to be there to answer questions. Tim Rogers from the Alaska Municipal League.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, please.
For the record, my name is Tim Rogers. I represent the Alaska Municipal League. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for sponsoring this bill. It's an important bill to ensure the continuation of improvements in operation of our emergency response systems. Legislation enabling a telephone surcharge has been around for about 13 years now, and it has changed during that time to meet the current needs. It was first passed to help local government upgrade their 911 systems from a basic system to an enhanced system. The enhanced system allowed the call takers to see the address of where the call was originating. And later it was again amended to allow for a surcharge on cell phones as their use became more widespread. And now, as was mentioned earlier, about 50% of all the calls coming into the call center come from cell phones. Passage of this increase in the authorized surcharge is important and needed for several reasons. In addition to helping the continual upgrade of the 911 systems, it can also help fund the next generation of 911 cell phone service that will allow the call taker to identify the location of the caller. And Chief Monaghan, I think, demonstrated the need for that. It can also help in the development of the address databases to avoid the untimely response delays as what occurred with the Godfrey tragedy. Another reason for the necessity of the legislation is that several of the funding sources for the implementation, upgrade, and operation of 911 services have disappeared in the past couple of years. The Safe Community and Revenue Sharing Programs, which were eliminated a couple years ago, provided funds that were frequently used for the 911 call center expenditures. And likewise, a community matching grant program was eliminated a couple years ago, and that program helped fund the capital improvements to the 911 system. The current upgrade that Anchorage has been going through for the past several years is partially funded by the community matching grant program. We do have, as well, a couple of suggestions for amendments to the bill. First, the existing statutes do have a differential rate for cities with a population under 100,000, and we think it would be helpful to maintain this differential because of and allow smaller communities to charge an amount in excess of $2. While Anchorage has indicated that the $2 surcharge will meet their needs going into the future, I don't think the same can be true for some of the smaller communities. In fact, if you look at the spreadsheet that you have in your packet, you'll see that the revenue shortfall currently for Fairbanks exceeds Anchorage's revenue shortfall by $200,000 as things stand right now. So I think there is a need for a larger authorized surcharge in the outlying areas than there is in Anchorage. Second, we would prefer that the election provision on page 2, lines 8 and 9, be eliminated for two reasons. One, if the authorized surcharge is changed as proposed, municipalities don't anticipate the additional authority need in the foreseeable future. And secondly, and probably more important, is that it sets a possible precedent for elections on user fee increases, and that is of concern to us. It may also be a poor precedent for future state fee increases as well, and we think it's best to avoid that if at all possible. We thank you for your consideration, and Mr. Chairman, we certainly thank you for your support on this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any questions at this time. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Let's go to Fairbanks now, and David Tyler, please.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me?
Yes, we have you. Identify yourself for the record, please.
So this is Dave Tyler, and I'm the president of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. I'd like to thank Senator Bundy for sponsoring this legislation. It's real important, as other people have mentioned. We do have a couple things we'd like to see addressed with this. First is the $2 limit. As mentioned by other folks, that's going to impact Fairbanks. It's not something that's going to last very long for us. Chief Paul Harris is here. He's going to testify next. He can give you some more specific details. But we feel that we have the local public process in place. We can govern. We have the ability to govern ourselves and when setting these fees. We also have a concern with the vote requirement. There's some time constraints. There's also some cost concerns. The cost of these votes, these elections. We have a representative form of government that we feel is, again, quite capable of making these decisions. There is a public process that we do have to go through. And finally, in previous versions of this legislation, there was sections that would allow other costs within dispatch other than just enhanced 911, and we'd like to see that in there as well. With that, that'd be the end of my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any questions at this time. Paul Harris, please.
Yes, this is Paul Harris. I'm the director for the Fairbanks Police Department, and I want to thank you for having me here, and I want to thank Senator Bundy for bringing this bill forward. I do support this concept, and I support this bill. I'd like to see some other issues addressed, and without going into all the details that everybody else said, because I support what Chief Monaghan said and what Chief Goodyear said, we're experiencing the same sort of thing with the increase in cell phones. I would give you one more example of how cell phones work and the necessity for having the enhanced 911. In August of last year, we had a hunter that was mauled by a grizzly bear down at Healy. He called on the cell phone. That was answered at the Fairbanks Police Department dispatch center, and it took 2 hours for a dispatcher, over 2 hours for a dispatcher to deal with that call and to coordinate the rescue efforts. A good portion of that time was just trying to locate the hunter. This brings to the point of using this money just for the technology, and at $2, looking into the future, this may just barely cover the technology and the maintenance. Again, I'll point out what Chief Modigan pointed out, a good portion of this money currently goes back to the telephone companies to pay for the lines that we have to have to have E911, the trunk lines. It also pays to have the addresses corrected, and every public safety answering point has to do a certain amount of work just to keep this up, because with telephone number portability, what we're experiencing here in Fairbanks is that people move their telephone, but for some reason the address never gets changed in E911, and so it's necessary for us when we get these calls to fill out that paperwork, make sure that it gets through the borough and to the telephone companies, and that master street address is updated. And that does, it is taking up a considerable amount of time, and as telephone number portability is more widespread, we're going to experience that in a greater degree. It's important that as we look at the surcharge, that it be able to pay for more than just the technology. It doesn't do any good for that telephone line to ring if you don't have somebody there that is trained and has the experience to deal with a hunter that is suffering from a bear mauling, that dispatcher is able to communicate both with that person, find out the medical condition, and make sure that the rescue resources are dispatched to the proper area and they can take with them the correct equipment to deal with the situation. A lot of our cost is in training, and it is in personnel services to make sure that we have those lines on 24/7. So like I said, I support this bill. I support the surcharge on the telephone. I think it's important. I would like to see that this the ability to raise it be left with the local governments. I would like to see a higher cap set on it. I think $3 is a more realistic cap, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
I see no questions this time. Thank you for your testimony. I'd like to go on to Kenai now. Chuck Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm speaking really from two hats today, one representing City of Kenai as a chief of police, and also the Alaska chapter of the National Emergency Number Association. We do see this bill as an ongoing solution, and it presents a lot of forward progress to a problem that we have been watching carefully over the past several years. And we thank Senator Bundy for bringing this forward. There are rising public expectations and demands for emergency services, such as our reduced response times. You've heard people talk about that we, as public safety professionals, show increased technical expertise in our response, especially in emergency, medical, hazardous material response situations. The recent studies that different boroughs have contracted to evaluate their emergency communications costs with respect to 911 show that approximately 25% to 35% of costs are covered through a 911 fee by users of phones, and the rest are supported as general property tax payers would support the balance. So NENA sees the $2 cap as giving all municipalities substantially more flexibility than they have now. Comments made earlier about a differential being possible for agencies or jurisdictions with less than 100,000, certainly that's something that could be discussed, and it makes sense on the face of it when you have far fewer subscribers paying into a system, but nevertheless, the system costs remain constant, especially in the rural areas. But having said that, we see the $2 cap as promoting a lot more a breathing room than municipalities and boroughs currently have with respect to providing 911 service, and it does begin to address the pace of technology. One of the things that we're having to deal with is technology really is moving a lot faster than public safety can respond. And with our state's emphasis on tourism and people coming to visit our scenic wonderland, they do expect their phones to work when they call for emergency help. And this will help us provide solutions, and it certainly won't be the final answer. And I think we all recognize that from this discussion, is that there will be a day when we would have to come back and justify and defend an increase. But $2 is definitely progress in that direction. So thank you, and I'll entertain any questions.
Yes, this is the chair. I was wondering if that 100,000 cap would impact, or the differential would impact Kenai. What's the size of your service area?
The Kenai Peninsula borough is 50,000, the whole borough. And we may actually have a little more than that now, but yes, certainly, both as a city and as a borough, that differential, if there was one, like if we were to make it $3 if you're under 100,000, as Chief Harris suggested, that would be something that the boroughs outside of the municipality of Anchorage would benefit from.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? I don't see any at this time. Thank you, Chief. And obviously you've heard many times, I'm sure, that with a name like COP, you were biologically predestined to be a chief of police.
Well, I can only hope I can live up to my name, Ben. Thank you, sir.
In Anchorage, Jim Rowe from the Alaska Telephone Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you fine. Identify yourself for the record, please.
I will. I'm Jim Rowe. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Telephone Association. The Alaska Telephone Association is a nonprofit organization set up on behalf of the local exchange telecommunications companies in the state. There are 14 companies that are members of the Alaska Telephone Association. We were very involved in the E911 legislation last year. There were times and different variants of the bills that we supported and the final one we opposed. We appreciate the wisdom of the legislators who didn't allow that to pass. We have concern as local exchange companies and the people billing customers for an increasing amount on a local phone bill. We're seeing a number of surcharges. You're all seeing it. However, we appreciate very much the bill that's been introduced by Senator Bundy. We think it's concise. We think it addresses many of the needs. Listening to the comments that I've heard this morning, this afternoon, it seems acceptable to a number of the entities that have given you testimony. The Alaska Telephone Association accepts and supports a non-voter-approved cap of $2. Recognizing individual municipalities can exceed that cap with the acquiescence of an informed electorate. That helps the telephone company because if the cap is beyond $2, to whatever level it might be, it can only be done with the municipality having gone out and really informed the public of the need. And as Chief Kopp mentioned, there is a rising public expectation for emergency services. And I think that would be an informed public that would get to make a decision on it. It's important to us also that there is parity between the wireline and the wireless surcharge. We have competition in the local telecommunications industry in the state, and it would be inequitable for one technology to have a surcharge put on its bill and not for a competitor who also had that charge. We serve the public, our customers, and the municipalities, the public safety personnel that are pursuing the needs to serve the public are serving those same customers. We're all those customers. Thank you very much. We look forward to supporting this bill. I am available for questions.
Thank you. And I don't see any questions at this time, Mr. Rowe. I appreciate your testimony. Moving to the Matsu, did you wish to testify, Mr. Gabbert?
No, I'm here for any questions, however.
Okay, thank you. In Kodiak, Linda Free, please.
Thank you. My name is Linda Free, and I'm the city manager for the city of Kodiak. This issue is very important to the city of Kodiak. You can see us listed on the chart in that our dispatch system is budgeted this year at about $600,000, and we'll bring in roughly $50,000 from our enhanced E911 surcharge. The making up that gap, we're doing it now with local revenues that are coming out of our general fund, and we are looking as a result of reduced funding at alternative measures to pay for this very important service for our residents. We do strongly support a bill this year. We're pleased to see the increase in the cap. However, we strongly believe in local control and local option, and we would encourage you to consider that a little more strongly in this bill. We, too, like Fairbanks and the other communities, have a strong public process through our ordinance procedure that requires a minimum of one public hearing, and we try to do a very good job of making sure our community is aware of issues related specifically to money and financing. And we think that the local elected officials have a very good feel for what, frankly, the market will bear and what people are willing to pay for the services that they receive in the community. We, too, would like to see an expansion of the use of these funds. I think if you look at lines 18 and 19 of the work draft of the bill, that line says the municipality may only use the enhanced 911 surcharge for the enhanced E911 system. We haven't interpreted that, and I believe most municipalities around the state have interpreted that, to mean just the E911 portion of their dispatch. I had an opportunity to sit in our dispatch center not too long ago, and it became clear to me what the difference between dispatch and E911 was. E911 are those emergency crisis calls that come into the center. And as has been mentioned before, without a body there to answer the phone and then to send the responders out, there's very little use for the equipment and the technology that E911 provides. We would encourage you to strongly look at our ability to use these funds to help pay for the additional dispatch costs that we incur as a community. For example, the city of Kodiak effectively operates a regional dispatch service for the entire road service and road system in Kodiak, and we provide services for many agencies. This would give us the ability to raise the surcharge, provide funds that would operate the entire dispatch system, which, as I said, dispatches not only city fire and police, but also dispatches our public works crew when they're needed to go out, several other fire departments. We help dispatch the Coast Guard as well as the state troopers in our community. Right now, the surcharge brings in less than 10% of our annual operating costs. That doesn't include our capital equipment replacement costs for E911 and or the dispatch center. Again, we appreciate the opportunity to testify. We're very supportive of a bill this year, and if this is the language that needs to go forward, we would support this, but we do encourage you to look at some of these other issues that we've raised. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, thank you, and I think last year's experience probably indicates that the bill will have to be pretty similar to what we have to have the support in the legislature. So I personally thank you for being willing to compromise and decide that a half a glass of water is better than none. I don't see any questions, so thank you again for your testimony. And is there anyone else here in Juneau who would like to testify on the CS for Senate Bill 100? Seeing none, we will hold this over to Thursday. I think we can answer the questions that have been asked by Thursday. And we'll take additional testimony if there is to be testimony on Thursday, and look forward to moving the bill on through the process. So, with that, thanks to all who testified and to our multitasking committee members. I think we'll stand adjourned at 2:45.